Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Hello, and welcome to the Pod After Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. We are here live in quarantine still, but we had an exciting weekend with the NFL draft. It was so much fun to watch. It sort of felt like there were actual sports back in our lives. I just saw the football plays on the TV of the highlights from the college players, and I got very excited.
Yeah, it felt like live football, Sam. It makes me want to go back to Game Pass more often, but a lot of times I'm like, oh, I already know how this game ends, so...
Yeah, well, we're going to go back to what happened this past weekend and recap the NFL draft, break it down with some questions, and give our takes on some of the players that were taken, some of the veterans that were impacted by the draft. But as always, we'll start with our kickoff question. So before we get into that, Andrew, how are you feeling? Let's get a quick check. And Garner, you too.
I can finally put my hair back underneath my headphones, apparently. I feel like I went a whole week without putting any shit in my hair, like, to keep it up because I didn't need to. And then when I did this week,
I'm like, you should probably go more than a week without putting shit in your hair.
That okay, excuse me. Hair product forming cream. From a grocery store or a Walgreens, but I digress. My hair is so fucking long, dude. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Christina told me that animal grooming places are going to be opening in Chicago soon, but not human grooming. So I might have to, get desperate and go to a
vet,
veterinarian or something like that to get my hair cut. Cause mine is also getting longer than I would like it to
be.
Hey,
listen, I got a guy who can cut your hair.
We going to see you in like a poodle cut, Sam? So it's just like little parts here and there.
Perm.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Garner, how are you doing?
I'm actually doing pretty good. I had a break quarantine and go down to the office today, but the good news out of that is our office gym was still open, so I actually got a workout in for the first time in like 2 weeks, and it felt amazing.
That sounds very nice, and I am very jealous.
We like just got a scale today, and apparently I've lost weight.
Oh boy!
But apparently it's all like muscle mass, clearly, because I feel like I look the same or worse than I did pre-quarantine.
Yeah, I don't want to know how many pounds I might have put on with all the booze I've been drinking. But anyway, let's get into our kickoff question.
And this game is underway!
So we are not shy at Pod After Touchdown to say that we are Packers fans, and we were all rightfully upset with how the whole drafting a backup quarterback went, with the Packers trading up to draft Jordan Love. And I've sort of come around to it and haven't gotten nearly as much angered with it the past couple of days. But the kickoff question today is, if you were drafted into a situation like that, so imagine you're in Jordan Love's shoes, who would be the ideal quarterback to back up and learn from for a year or two?
I'll start with this. And you know, the funny thing with the Packers draft, quick, I'll try to not get too into it, but I thought I was positive for a while because one of my friends was telling me, like, you know, you got to trust the process. And then I find out today, he's like, yeah, there's really no positive outlook on this Packers draft, which is is pretty upsetting. But anyway, for this question, I thought of a few different guys. You know, as a fellow short person, I thought Drew Brees would be a good person to learn from in terms of how to be a short QB, even though Drew Brees is 6 feet tall. But ultimately, I'm going with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's a winner. He has 6 Super Bowls. I would love to know that playoff experience. Like, okay, if I ever actually do get to the postseason, like, what do I do now? And I think there, He's got the TB12 juice too. Like, I want to know what his secrets are for longevity, which is going to help me get paid more. And then, you know, Tampa, great team outlook, great city to live in. Can get umpteen different Outback Steakhouse franchises going at the same time. So it seems like a match made in heaven.
So I'm actually, you know, speaking of, you know, making money, I'm going to go with Russell Wilson here. He's been the ultimate pro's pro. You know, he loves football. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. He doesn't get nearly as much respect and admiration as he probably deserves. Obviously,
the Hawks.
He went to our alma mater, Wisconsin, so I could reminisce with him on that, although we only spent 1 year there. If I was really looking for someone towards the end of their career, I'd probably go with like Ryan Fitzpatrick, just to like be like, dude, how did you manage to play for 28 of the 32 NFL teams? Like, what was it like training, you know, switching locker rooms so often, and just hear all of his war stories? Because I could imagine he's got some stories in there.
I can guarantee you that Fitzpatrick would be 1,000 times more fun than Russell Wilson. Like, you're not.
That's probably a good point.
Like, yeah, he went to Wisconsin, but like, how many beers do you think he was pounding on State Street? Like, any weekend at all? He was probably in and out after the first semester.
That's a really good point. Garner, who do you want to learn from?
I considered pretty much everyone you guys already mentioned here. My first thought was like Tom Brady, obviously, like GOAT, and then I was like Russell Wilson. It is, you know, a Wisconsin guy, like fun. But I ended up going with Mackin's first thought, Drew Brees. And just, I mean, he's should be, and I hope is, right there at the GOAT talk. He's so skilled. But like, the thing too is like, he's not even that flashy. Like, he's just good. And he's an experienced veteran, and he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders, where he would be a good guy to learn from. He'd be nice. He'd be helpful. He'd do everything he can to help you succeed.
Make sure you're not stealing craps, things like that. Jameis Winston signing.
All great answers. All right, well, we're going to get into our NFL draft recap now. Okay, so we're not going to break down every single pick here. Obviously, there were a lot of fantasy-relevant players that were drafted, so we're just going to give our takes in response to some questions we've got. And the one I'll lead off with, and Andrew, I'll throw it to you first, is what is your favorite rookie landing spot? And we'll break it down into two categories: your rookie that was drafted in the first three rounds and a rookie that was drafted in rounds 4 through 7.
All right. So my first guy in rounds 1 through 3, we actually alluded to this situation in the past, and I would say Denzel Mims has really appealed to me because he went to the Jets. I'm not too afraid of Adam Gase. Maybe I should be, but I feel like the way he profiles is like this big guy who's good at getting 50-50 balls. And he really, you know, based on all of his production at Baylor, that he profiles as an X receiver, something the Jets don't have. And it could arguably be a better fit for that position than Jerry Jeudy, who everyone was saying, you know, Judy's going to go to the Jets. So I really like him in that spot. And the fact that the Jets were able to still get him in the late second round.
I'm going to be really interested to see how those targets get distributed this year. Obviously, Jamison Crowder's still there, so he'll likely take a large portion of the targets from Darnold. But with Robbie Anderson gone, Brashad Perriman also there, how do those two take over the remaining targets? But who's your second player that you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, so I just picked 4, to be honest. I'll run through them all really quickly. I can see the look on your face here, because it's rounds 4 through 7. So I actually like tweeted about this. I really think it's so hard to find rookies in rounds 4 through 7 for fantasy that are like ever going to make a long-term impact. Even like at the back half of the third round, you can find a lot of stinkers historically. So these are four running backs in the fourth round that I think could have a chance to make an impact this year, but something would have to happen in front of them. Joshua Kelly, he got drafted to the Chargers. Like LaMichael Pirine, drafted to the Jets. Anthony McFarland, drafted to the Steelers. And DJ Dallas, drafted to the Seahawks. So all of those situations, they're like the third-ish string guy, which is why they probably got taken in the fourth round. Those teams didn't have like an immediate need, but you know, we've talked about James Conner's injury history before. We know about Chris Carson and Rashad Penny's injury history. Austin Eckler is more of like the scat back receiving guy, so they might work in a second dude. And Le'Veon Bell's a bit older. You could break down if they start giving him too many touches. So those are places where, you know, if you have a deep enough bench, maybe you draft one of these guys or keep those names in mind for the waiver wire.
So I'm going to segue off of that because my round 4-7 guy was actually Anthony McFarland. I think Benny Snell and Jalen Samuels, you're gone. Like James Conner has dealt with a ton of injuries. So if he can work his way into the starting lineup, it might have to be because of a Conner injury, which again is not out of the question, then I think he can be that guy. McFarland's dealt with injuries himself, but he's elusive, he's explosive, he's got all the traits that you're looking for. As far as my round 1-3 guy, it's Keyshawn Vaughn out of Vanderbilt going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the third round. Bruce Arians had a quote last week saying Keyshawn Vaughn is a guy that can play every down. And I just think he's got so much more potential than Ronald Jones. The offensive staff did not like what Jones was doing last year. I think he's got a clear path to landing every down back. And Arians has always wanted a pass-catching running back. James White was one of the best pass-catching running backs when Tom Brady was in New England. And now that he's with Tampa Bay, he's going to be looking for that same sort of check-down player as well. So Keyshawn Vaughn, I'm super excited for him and cannot wait to see what he's going to bring in that Tampa Bay offense. Garner, you have anyone that you want to point out?
I mean, first one in the first couple rounds seems a little obvious, but Justin Jefferson, I mean, Stephon Diggs leaves and that hole is right there for Justin Jefferson to fill. And I think there's a really good chance that hopefully he can just step right in. I mean, as a Packers fan, I hope not, but for overall football fan, I think he can be a good fit there. And then for my later rounds, going a complete 180 around the corner here, whatever you want to say, I'm going Blake Ferguson, long snapper. A long snapper is drafted. I mean, come on.
Okay.
There's no fantasy.
If any long snapper
impact,
gets drafted, it's a great landing spot, right?
Yeah, I'll say.
What team drafted this guy?
Miami. They had like 20 picks. Why not draft a long snapper?
I cannot wait for my individual long snapper player league to form this offseason.
When a field goal goes awry and he recovers a fumble and runs it in.
That's classic Patriots. Classic Patriots coaching tree for Brian Flores to get some like special teamers throughout the draft as well.
Okay, so we're gonna move on to our next question, and these next couple are actually gonna focus on some of the players that got impacted by rookies being drafted, and we'll start with who our biggest non-rookie risers are, and we'll each point out a couple. And I'll start with Davante Adams. This may be a bold take, but he's going to be my wide receiver one going into 2020. I think he's got a shot to get 200-plus targets from Rodgers. Rodgers is only going to throw the ball to him, and it's more of just a confidence thing. Like I don't think either of those other wide receivers on the Packers do enough to step up and warrant a large target share. My other riser was also Chris Carson. So, Andrew, you mentioned that the Seahawks added DJ Dallas, but that was in the fourth round.
Yeah.
I don't think it's enough. Like, Rashad Penny's still going to be there. So I think it was more so just a, like, we need to get someone on the roster because our backup is
Travis Homer
currently injured.
Travis Homer starting with, they brought Marshawn back too.
Yeah, they did.
Jesus. Yeah, definitely like a good depth add, like you said. It would be a long shot for Dallas to immediately contribute.
So I think Carson's got a quick path to being an RB1 again this season. It will be interesting to see if he gets worked into the passing offense a little bit more.
Do you think that there's a world, going back to Adams, that they like run so much where he doesn't see as many targets?
God, I hope not.
Because that's what LaFleur really is saying. So
that is what he's saying, but and I'm being a bit hyperbolic with my 200-plus target take, but I think he will be at or near the top of the leading target getters this season.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just not a ton of competition in that offense to get targets.
Yeah. So. I mean, yeah, you could say like Alan Lazard would be a sleeper. I almost thought of him in higher regard right now because they need him to break out because they didn't draft anyone, but yeah. Definitely better for Adams overall. I'll move on to my veteran risers. I just put Drew Lock. Now, like, I would have to consider him on my draft board because he has so many goddamn weapons that the Broncos drafted. Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler. He's got Melvin Gordon from free agency. They still have Noah Fant. He's just got to make the throws, but if you've got that many weapons, it'll be really exciting to see Denver try to keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs. Secondarily, I went with two guys who I am rising on because the team did not draft wide receivers, and that's Christian Kirk and Andy Isabella. So I know Garner knows all too well that by winning the mock draft competition that, you know, he almost got perfect, but he didn't get CeeDee Lamb to the Cardinals in there. So no wide receivers drafted by the Cardinals. Opportunity remains for these guys in the Cliff Kingsbury offense after DeAndre Hopkins.
I was going to say, they didn't draft a receiver, but they traded for, like, I don't know, one of the best receivers in the NFL, so...
Well, yeah, but there's going to be, like, a wide receiver two coming out of that offense, right? Like, if they're going to be this high-scoring offense, if Kyler Murray is going to be a top-five QB the way he's being projected, either Hopkins is going to do what you're claiming Adams is going to do, or it's going to get spread out and there's going to be other benefactors here.
Yeah. Okay. For my riser, I mean, I was thinking the same as Mackens with Drew Lock, actually, where again, they drafted first two rounds to top end wide receivers, and Drew Lock wasn't the most promising performer last year, but I mean, he showed some potential. And as you said, he just has to make a few passes here and there, and he's got the weapons now. And commend you guys too for I totally, when I saw this, I was thinking like, oh yeah, what teams added players that like would make people rise? And I totally spaced on like, again, Packers didn't draft a wide receiver, so Adam's stock keeps going up. Like,
yeah, regarding Drew Lock, he's one of those guys that if I'm really punting on quarterback, I maybe take him with my very last pick.
Oh yeah,
as my QB1, or yeah, I think he's got more upside as a QB2 in any sort of 2QB or super flex league.
Agreed.
But let's move on to the opposite side of that, which are our veteran fallers. So who are some players that are falling down your draft board?
You want me to just hit these quick? I'll probably take all of your guys's. It's all the running backs that got these running back studs drafted in front of them. You thought these guys were safe.
Yeah.
No, they're fucking not. Marlon Mack, Jonathan Taylor got drafted. Damian Williams, he can't stay healthy to begin with. And then they go and draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire as his heir apparent. And I think that'll be faster than not. Kerryon Johnson, you know, he's been injury prone as well. They drafted DeAndre Swift. And then the last guy I've got is Devin Singletary, who we wanted to see get more work. And he was getting good touches at the end of the year. But I heard something from Brandon Bean, the Bills GM, that he sees Zach Moss as a guy who's going to get work on first and second down. So I think these are four guys that all have to be dropping in draft boards. Where they're going to drop is going to be really weird, to be honest.
Yeah, you definitely took all of them. Marlon Mack is the one I was most bummed about because I was really looking forward to seeing him in the offense with Rivers and sort of having the backfield on his own, potentially getting more work in the passing game. And, you know, I thought he was a super pick because he was going in like the fifth round in mock drafts before the NFL draft happened. The other guy that I will mention, and I don't know how much it impacts, but Amari Cooper has to take a little bit of a hit, I think, because of CeeDee Lamb coming. Now, there are rumors that Amari Cooper could be moving to the slot because of the addition of CeeDee Lamb, which would actually be good for his value. So it might be a little bit of offsetting, but I don't think he'll see nearly the target share that he saw. I think it'll between him and Michael Gallup, it'll be a bit of a three-headed monster, probably with Cooper and Gallup leading it and CeeDee Lamb behind. But I don't think Lamb will take away from just one of them. It'll be from both.
Yeah, that's interesting because my gut would say Cooper will still get his, even though it might be more with more variability than like what we're used to with Cooper when he played for the Raiders. And I figured he'd take more away from Gallup, but
Cooper with the Raiders. Ugh.
I mean, hopefully they all benefit and Dak Prescott is your QB2 on the year or something crazy.
Real quick. I saw someone was doing a giveaway of an Amari Cooper signed helmet and he signed it number 89, which was his number with the Raiders. So that was kind of weird because it was on a Cowboys helmet.
Hey, that means it's rare.
Garner, I think you said you had a player that was falling as well.
Yeah, I've always been hesitant to draft him, but Carson Wentz, I know he's like every year he's got the hype, every year he's got concern for injury. And I know we're not expecting Jalen Hurts to take anything directly from him, but I mean, I've heard the slight rumor that like he might almost have like kind of like a Taysom Hill role in the offense where like, again, there's been rumors of them trying to switch him to like fullback or something or tight end or like they want to do something else with him. So like they're possibly thinking of having him as the Taysom Hill role.
That's really interesting because the talk about Carson Wentz this past couple of days has all been about the weapons that they've added. I mean, they brought in Marquise Goodwin. They drafted like six other deep wide receiver threats. So, you know, all the talk last year with Wentz was, well, you know, all of his receivers got hurt, and now he's going to have a plethora of options to throw to. But that certainly is an interesting twist because Taysom Hill does take snaps and touches away from Breeze and others in that offense. And to see Wentz as a potential loser, it'll be interesting to see how much he gets worked into that offense in that sort of role.
Yeah, I mean, you said like they've got a lot more weapons, which is good. But if he's only throwing three out of the four passes, I mean, that's going to hurt him. He can still be productive, but maybe not quite as productive as we're hoping for.
Right. Okay. So now we're going to switch our focus back to the rookies and we're going to do some quick hit rankings and we're doing it from a redraft lens. Again, so we're very focused on redraft and want to give you the best analysis from that perspective. But I think there is some interesting conversation that could be had around rookie players. Andrew's done a lot of work the past couple days on draft capital and where running backs and receivers land and what their potential is for fantasy football in the future. So we're just going to do a quick top three rookie running backs for redraft this year. And I'll start. Mine is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I've actually got Keyshawn Vaughn second and Jonathan Taylor third. Andrew, what about you?
Yeah, I figured you were going to do Vaughn with the situation. I feel like you've been tweeting out some love for him. I I just have this Jonathan Taylor first. I'm kind of still in dynasty mode, to be honest, but I think long term, like towards the end of the year, you're going to see more Jonathan Taylor than DeAndre Swift and Clyde Edwards-Helaire in that order.
One thing with Taylor is, you know, because Mac is towards the end of his rookie contract, is there is a scenario that could play out that's similar to what happened with Chubb a couple years ago, is the Colts trade Marlon Mack and just give Jonathan Taylor the entire backfield. And I don't think it's a question that Jonathan Taylor is a better running back, a pure running back, but I mean, they're going to trust Mack a little bit more, knowing that he's been with the team for a couple of years. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor had his fumbling issues in college, but I really think that there's a scenario that plays out by week 10, Jonathan Taylor just absolutely owns this backfield.
Yeah. Here's a scenario. David Johnson gets hurt. Marlon Mack gets traded to the Texans because Bill O'Brien needs himself a running back.
And then he trades for Leonard Fournette, and then he trades for Derrick Henry and just capitalizes
on
all the AFC South running backs.
As I finished that thought, I realized, though, this would never happen because they're in the same division. But, you know, anything would happen with Bill O'Brien.
So what was your final ranking then of top three rookie running backs?
I mean, by the end of the season, I would still have Taylor. Like, he's got the best line, then Swift, and then Helaire.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Let's move on to rookie wide receivers. We're going to do the same exercise here. Andrew, who are your top three rookie wide receivers for redraft this year?
Okay. CD Lamb, I've got number one. And actually, what's funny is I didn't hear that thing about Cooper, so I expect Lamb to work mostly out of the slot in this pass heavy offense, so I think he has a lot of immediate opportunity there. Denzel Mims, I mentioned before, I think there's, you know, a good amount of vacated targets from Robbie Anderson that he can capitalize on. And third, Jerry Jeudy, I think, again, with the draft capital being a big deal, and particularly in full PPR, I think Jeudy has a chance to get a lot of targets and catches there. Probably even more likely than CD Lamb out of the slot in particular, because you've got Cortland Sutton on the outside.
All right. So I've got Jerry Jeudy number one, Jalen Reagor number two, and Denzel Mims number three. So as good as CD Lamb is and as good as Dak Prescott was last year, I just don't know if he's going to get enough of the target share to be consistent in fantasy football. And I think the other three that I just listed have a better shot to see consistent usage in their offense. Jerry Jeudy, I'm a little bit hesitant on, just because I think the Broncos are going to be a little bit more conservative this year and not necessarily want to be throwing the ball a ton unless they're absolutely forced to. So that's where I'm at now. I'm going to stick with my bold take that none of these guys land in the top 30 of wide receivers in 2020. So they might shine at certain points throughout the season, but I'm not spending a ton of capital on them.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a couple unknowns for sure. Cause I mean, you don't know how early these running backs are going to get work, like you mentioned, with Mack and Taylor, because usually running backs aren't, you know, starting week one or week two, unless maybe it's like Saquon Barkley. And then with these passing offenses, you know, Mike McCarthy's coming in. We expect him to throw a lot, but we don't know exactly what it's going to look like. And like you said, with the Broncos, like, I know I said one of our previous episodes, I would expect them to be run heavy. Defensive head coach usually isn't like has a pass heavy mindset, but someone on Twitter told me Dan Quinn of the Falcons, like, that's a pass heavy offense. We think of them that way and he's a defensive coach. So I think I could see that going either way for sure. And only time will tell. And I haven't even put rookies in my rankings, to be honest. So once we do a rankings episode, it'll be interesting to see where these guys slot in and what round I would actually, you know, draft them in.
Right. All right. So to wrap things up, obviously said there's a lot that will be changing over the next couple of months and trying to figure out where these guys slot in, not only in our rankings, but in the offenses they're playing at. So which position battle, Andrew, are you most interested in following over the offseason?
Yeah, I'll keep this quick. It's the battle in Los Angeles between Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson at the running back position. Gotcha. This is actually one of the guys we haven't talked about yet this episode, but clearly, you know, last year, Daryl Henderson did not do enough with limited touches to impress McVay. So they used the first pick they had in this draft, which was in the second round, invested it in a running back in Cam Akers. And I think he's part of that top five. We've mentioned all of them other than J.K. Dobbins thus far. And yeah. I think, you know, Henderson has a chance to keep his spot if he really improves in the offseason, but he's got Cam Akers breathing down his neck.
I'm totally in the same boat. You stole my thunder, but I think this is going to be one of the most polarizing situations in all the fantasy football to monitor, because we saw how much success Todd Gurley has had in that offense the past several years. And obviously Henderson and Brown, you mentioned, are returning from last year. Brown seemed to be the backup to Todd Gurley last year, but Sean McVay has also talked about getting Daryl Henderson more involved. And of the three, Cam Akers, like you mentioned, has the most draft capital associated with them, having been taken in the second round. So there may be value in one of those guys. I will likely be, I don't want to say avoiding them this draft season, but I will be very cautious in who I take. And it may be one of those things where I, you know, maybe the first couple of weeks you try and figure out who's sort of separating themselves, and then maybe there's a buy low opportunity. But I think there's a lot of analysis that needs to get done to figure out who's going to come away with the starting role, or if they stick with a running back by committee approach.
Yeah, last offseason, we had people in mock drafts drafting Daryl Henderson in the 6th to 8th round, which was absolutely insane. And that was all because of Todd Gurley's arthritic knee and all of the buzz around that. So definitely something to monitor and not overreact to either way on the spectrum.
Garner, I think you've got one that's hopefully a little bit different than this.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's kind of touched on before, but and maybe not my most interested, but I'll be very curious to see with the Jets wide receivers, because they have a plethora of mediocrity there. I mean, they've got Crowder, Doxson, and Nunwa. They brought Perriman in. Now Mims is coming into the picture, and he has talked up a decent amount. He should be a good addition to the team, but again, all that mediocrity of, like, there's no clear number one of, like, holy crap, this is a Hopkins and Adams. Like, they don't have doesn't feel like they have their go-to guy. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see with all those names who actually comes out on top as the asset that you want from that team.
When you name all those scrubs, that makes me even more confident that Mims is just going to, you know, fall out with this opportunity. He has every opportunity to get, like, 1,000 yards and, I don't know, maybe not a ton of touchdowns. But
I do think, though, that Le'Veon Bell, I mean, you're forgetting him. He's as much of a part of the passing offense as any of those receivers are. I mean, I think he was definitely top three on that team in targets on the season. So I don't see his target share going away this year, that's for sure. All right, so next episode, we're going to be going through some rankings debates now that we have all the landing spots, and we've got another special announcement that we'll be making as well. And we're also going to do some listener questions. So send us any that you have. You can email us at podaftertouchdownff@gmail.com, or as always, you can reach us at podaftertd on Twitter, or tweet our individual accounts at Sam Hoppin, at Andrew Mackins, and at Garnther. But until then, continue to stay safe, stay home, be well, and with that, the NFL draft kick is good.